The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Tuesday, Tes Elul, 17th of August. Not Rav Matisseur Lawrence, but Rav Yonki Wiesenfeld. Topic, MS for Sheker, Part 2.
Okay, so before the holidays, on the Tuesday before the holidays, before we close down for the holidays, Rav Moshe Batal Grosnas gave an excellent... gave an excellent shiur on the subject of Emes and Sheker. I really enjoyed the shiur, and on holiday in Spain, I give a daily halacha after Shachris each day for 5 minutes, and I was going to do Hilchos Tzedakah, and I'd been preparing for it, but after I heard the shiur from Moshe Batal Grosnas on Emes and Sheker, I switched, and I decided that I would use that as the basis for my shiurim over the holidays. So I did Chazorah on the Shir, and I spoke about it each day for most of the days of the holiday. And then over the weekend, I was in Manchester, and I was asked to give the Torah Shir there, and I did it there as well. And I told them, I gave him the credit for it, and I told them, if the Shir is any good, that the credit goes to Moshe Batal Grosnas, and if it's not, then it's my fault. But that's where the Shir was born, if you like. That's where it came from. And now, because we have a situation, an emergency situation that didn't have anybody to speak here this morning, and he tried a couple of our regulars, but one's on holiday and one couldn't do it to short notice. So therefore I said I would later try and do a Emes v'Sheker Part 2. I'll try not to revise, not to go over all the material that you've heard already, for those of you who either heard the shiur or remember the shiur. But it was a very intriguing shiur as to when you're allowed to speak what we would call conventionally not the truth, when you're allowed to speak a lie. L'shem shalom, l'shem halacha, l'shem l'toyra, etc., etc., when a lie is permitted, kaviyochel, we'll expand on it a little bit with trying not to repeat all the material. One of the first bits, and this is like an interesting light-hearted digression, you're supposed to start the shiur with something light-hearted, was that one of the first rayas that he brought was from a sefer Ugas Eliyahu. Shalos HaTshuvos Ugas Eliyahu was a Shalos HaTshuvos sefer written by Rabbi Eliyahu Rassof, who lived in New York in the 1950s. The sefer was published in 1960, and he was one of these Litvish Rabbonim, big Talmid Chachomim, who learned in their youth in the big Litvish yeshivas, as there were many, who ended up as refugees landing in places like London, Manchester, Glasgow, New York, Los Angeles, other places like that. They didn't have panosa. They were massive Talmidei Chachomim, and they ended up as rabbis in not Heimische communities, let's say. Far-flung communities. Sometimes they were totally out of the way. Many of them never had even a minion of Shomer Shabbos. We had quite a lot of them here in London as well. You had here Rav Ferber, you had Rav Unterman, you had Diane Fisher. Their kehillahs were not the big Talmidei Chachomim who wanted to learn Ksos, who wanted to hear Shiurim and Pilpul in Torah. But on the other hand, they needed the Parnassos. They became Rabbonim in communities which were not on their level of Torah. In any event, Rav Rossoff wrote a sefer called Shalos HaTshuvos Ugas Eliyahu, and he brought there the Shaila. I won't go into it now because obviously Rav Moshe Batal already said it. But the Shaila was, the guy phoned him up and said, I'm sitting Shiva. My Shiva finishes on Shabbos morning. My wife has been running the business for the week during the Shiva. And she's made an absolute mess of the business. Everything is wrong. Everything is upside down. I need to get to work as soon as possible. So I've heard that on the last day of Shiva, Miktsa Fayom Kikuloi, that you only have to sit for a short time in the morning. So can I sit? Is it true? Is it correct, Alpi Alocha, that I can get up a Shabbos morning, I'll sit for 5 minutes, and then I can get to work, and I can go to the business? And he says, Nishalti by telephone, he writes. I was asked by telephone, and the he paskened for this person. He said to him, you're wrong. He says, what you've heard is amaratsus. It's the ignorant people pasken like that. The halacha is that you have to keep the shiva the full day, and therefore you have to sit the whole of Shabbos until not to Shabbos. And therefore you won't go to work, and he won't be mechal Shabbos. So the afterwards he had second thoughts, and he thought to himself, but I told him sheker. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is that you do get up on the seventh day, on the last day of Shiva in the morning, and you don't have to keep the Shiva, and you can go to work on the last day. Obviously it was Shabbos, so I was trying to prevent him from being mechal Shabbos. On the other hand, so this is where the discussion started off, and then he went into the various, Moshe Patala brought the various riots, discussions as to whether or not you can or you can't tell a lie for the sake of halacha. That's effectively what he was doing. I'm telling him a sheker in order that he shouldn't be mechal Shabbos. Is that muta? Is that not? Is it morally right? Is it halachically right? Etc. The light-hearted digression is the funny name for a sefer, Ugas Eliyahu, the cake of Eliyahu. Where did the name come from, Ugas Eliyahu? Just an agav. Moshe Patel didn't discuss it as to where the name came from. I had a look at the front page of the. Of the Sefer, of the Sa'at HaTshuvah. It says there that he wrote a Sefer called Kisei Eliyahu as well, and he also wrote a Sefer Yad Eliyahu. So I thought here you've got a natural progression. Right? Kisei Eliyahu, he was sitting on this chair, and Yad Eliyahu, with his hands, he was holding a piece of the Rebbetzin's cake. Yeah, it's Rebbetzin's chocolate cake, Rebbetzin Russell's chocolate cake. So therefore this was the progression. I wrote a Sefer Kisei Eliyahu, and I was sitting on my chair, and I was holding in my hand a piece of the cake. That's Kenizam. Why is it not possible? Because 150 years earlier, in Livorno, in Italy, there was also a sefer published called Sha'alat HaTshuvos Ugas Eliyahu from another Godoy. And probably this Yidin in Italy, who lived 150 years before Rebbetzin Rassof, never had a piece of Rebbetzin Rassof's cake. He had Rebbetzin's pizza. Yeah, maybe that was the Ugas Eliyahu. I want to know, where does the name come from, Ugas Eliyahu? So I looked it up, and I just want to draw your attention to two parshas in Melachim Aleph, which speak about Ugas Eliyahu. There are makoros for it. The first one is in Melachim Aleph Yud Zayin. Story is as follows, that Ahav and Izebel, Ahab and Jezebel, they were the king and queen of the northern kingdom of Malchus Yisrael, and they taunted Eliyahu HaNavi. They taunted Eliyahu HaNavi, and Eliyahu HaNavi, as a result of that, made a gezeirah, he made Alpi Nevuah, that there would be no rain and no dew for 3 years. We say it in the Zmiris on Motzah Shabbos, Ish Talamota Otzah Sholoshonim, that for 3 years there was no rain. There was a famine, and people were very, very hungry. There was no food, nothing grew, etc., etc. During that period, Eliyahu HaNavi got a command from the Ribbono Shel, and he said, Kum Lech Tzorfato, go to a place called Tzorfas, which is near Tzidon, on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, and there, Hinei Tzivisi Shom Isha Almona Lechal Kelecho. Go there, you'll meet an Almona, and she will look after you. So it says that he went there, and he came to the entrance of the town, and he met a lady collecting firewood. And he said to her, I've just come in from a journey. I'm very, very thirsty. Can you give me something to drink? Bearing in mind that water was at a premium. Very difficult. And she gave him straight away. Right? She gave him straight away. He said, Choli ma'at ma'im ba'keli ve'eshte, ba'telech lo'kachas. And then he said to her, and how about something to eat? She said to him, listen, Rabbi, she said, Chai Hashem elekecho, im yejdi mo'oig. I only have the ingredients for one cake. He says, she said, she says, I've got one handful of flour in the jug, umat shemen batapachas, and a little bit of oil. I'm collecting firewood now. I'm going to bake a little cake with the oil and the flour that I've got. I'm going to eat from it. I'm going to give some of it to my son to eat. And then we're both going to die, because that's the end of the food. We have nothing else. That's what she says. She says, "Va'asisihu li v'livni, va'acholonuhu v'mosnu." This is it. That's the end of the food. We're out. We're about to die. So Eliyahu HaNavi said to her, "Oh, Tiri, don't worry. All you have to do is," this is a really nice one. Yeah, it says, "All you have to do is bake the little cake and give it to me, and I'll eat it." That's what he said. Vayemel Eliyahu, "Al Tiri, boi asi kidvorech. Do exactly as you suggested. Ach, asi li mishomu goktana borishoino. Make me the first cake. And then a miracle will happen, and you'll be able to bake many more cakes. Yeah. And she says, "Ki choyomo Hashem elokei Yisrael, katakemach lo sichlo, the flour will not, will be a constant supply, v'tzapachas Hashem elokei sechsor, until the Ribbono Shel'olam will end the famine and there will be food again." Otelech v'taseh kidva Eliyahu, and they both ate, she and he and her son ate yomim for a long time. Now, so it said there that was the first ugas Eliyahu. He told her, "Ach asili mishom ugo katano, make me a little cake." So that's the ugas Eliyahu. That's one ugas Eliyahu that we find in Melachim Aleph Yud-Zayin. The second ugas Eliyahu was Melachim Aleph Yud-Tes. The battle continues between Achan and Izevel versus Eliyahu Hanavi, and Achav and Izevel murdered all the Nevi'im that existed at the time. Eliyahu Hanavi was the last one who was on the run, and Izevel sent a message to Eliyahu Hanavi saying, "I have executed, I've murdered all the Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael, and you're next. You're on the wanted list." She says, "This time tomorrow, you are meat, the dead meat." And it says he had to run away, and he ran away to the Midbar Be'eshova. And he's walking through the desert in the heat of the day, nothing to eat, nothing to drink. And in the end, he collapses and he finds a tree. Says that he found a tree and he sat under Vayova, he came by Yeshem, and he rested Tachas Roisem Echod, underneath a Roisem tree. Interestingly, Rashi says, Unibro Belaz. It's a Unibro tree, which in English they translate as a juniper, as a juniper tree. Yeah, I looked it up, it's like a very bushy tree, the leaves are very dense. So he sheltered underneath the tree, Vayishkav Vayishan Tachas Roisem Echod, and then the Malach touched him and said, "Kum Echol, wake up and eat." Vayabet, and he said, V'hinei Mirah Shosav Ugas Ritzofim. Above his head was a ugaf, a cake, that had been baked on coals, v'tzapachas maim, and water, v'yoichal v'yesh v'yosha v'yishkov, and he ate, and he fell asleep. And then he ate a second time, and then the pasuk says, v'yokom v'yoichal v'yishteh, v'yelech b'koyecha achilo ahi, arboim yoim v'arboim lailo, that eating that he ate from this ugas resofim sustained him for 40 days and 40 nights, ad ha'hu elehim choyev, he walked through the desert until he arrived at Har Sinai, which is a very interesting parallel, because Moshe Rabbeinu also said that he said Bo'eshe Bohor Arboim Yoim V'Arboim Lailo, that he was in the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, Lechem Lo Yochalti Umayim Lo Shosisi. So there must be a parallel there, but this isn't the subject. So therefore, just Agav, right? Ugas Eliyahu is not such a strange title anymore. There were at least two cases in Melachim where Eliyahu Hanavi had an ugo, and he either ate it from the Ishot Tzorfatis or from the tree by the command of the Malach. So we have a source for the name of the Sefer. Which one of those two ugois was the source for Ugas Eliyahu for the Yid in Livorno, for the Sfadi rabbi in Livorno in Italy in 1810, or Rabbi Rossoff in 1960? I don't know. Maybe it was the same one, maybe there were two different ones. I've got no idea, but at least The title's nothing to do with Rebbetzin Rassov's chocolate cake. Okay. Hello? Next it occurred to me this morning, I didn't do it, I should have looked at the Hakdoma of Shal Teshuvah Ugas Eliyahu, because sometimes in the Hakdoma of a Sefer, they provide you with a reason why he says, "I called this Sefer Ugas Eliyahu because my wife makes a good chocolate cake, or because it was related to a parasha Melachim Aleph." Okay, that's Agav. Let's get to the subject, right? We're trying to do a sequel, if you like, add on to the shiur of Rav Moshe Vital Grossdas without treading on his feet, but adding on a little bit. Occasionally, I have to give evidence in court, and I have to solemnly and sincerely affirm that the evidence that I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I've done that a number of times. I've told the truth a number of times. But I've given evidence a number of times, and I've asked the barrister, either my barrister or the opposing barrister, what's the nafkamina, alom de shakasha, what's the nafkamina between the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Why can't I just give evidence to say that the evidence that I shall give shall be the truth? What's this whole drosha for? And quite frankly, nobody's ever given me an answer. And in fact, most of them say, you know what's funny? I've been listening to this being said by witnesses in court day after day for the last 40 years, and never ever occurred to me, what's the nafka minna between truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So let's have a look at it and see whether or not we can come up with something. The truth is easy. The truth is accurate reporting. The truth is that I saw something.
Kol Halashon.
Yeah, I saw something. I saw Reuven killed Shimon at a certain time in a certain place. I saw that Reuven was Mechal Shabbos at a certain time or a certain place. I saw that Reuven swindled Shimon at a certain time in a certain place. And I reported accurately, without any exaggeration, without any embellishment, Devorim Kaviyoson exactly as they happened. That's the simple, that's truth. And that's conventional understanding of truth. And obviously the Torah expects that if you're speaking the MS and you're reporting on something that you saw, that it should be the truth. But in Torah, it's not quite, not always. So we'll come to that in a minute. The whole truth is very simple. Sometimes there's no harm whatsoever in telling a part truth, an incomplete truth. Sometimes it can be quite damaging. And the example that Rabbi Dessler gave, for instance, was if you get asked under oath in a court, is the library open on Wednesday? Then you could answer yes, and that would be the truth. You could answer no, and that would be the truth. Because the library is open until 1, half day on Wednesday. So if you get asked by the judge, a judge or a barrister, is the library open on Wednesday? The answer is yes, it's open, because it's open in the morning. You get asked, is it open in the afternoon? You say no, and that is also true. But neither of them is a truthful answer, because there is the other half of the day when it's closed or when it's open. And sometimes that makes no difference, but sometimes it matters. For instance, if somebody was to tell you, I need to go to the library to return a book, is the library open on Wednesday? So if you answer yes, they might go in the afternoon. If you answer no, they might not go when they could go in the morning. And in fact, Bizman Azeh, you could even answer maybe the truthful answer, which is that if you want to return a book, there's a box outside that you can do it 24 hours a day, any day of the week, 7/24. Or 24/7, sorry. Yeah. So therefore, sometimes if it's just an academic thing, does the library open on Wednesdays? No harm. I'll tell them yes, I'll tell them no. Barristers always coach you to give very, very short, concise answers. Don't darshan. Don't stand there explaining yourself, because every word that you say in addition, the other barrister is going to use to try and trip you up and to try and prove that you're contradicting yourself, etc. So therefore, the barrister would say, is the library open? Answer yes, full stop. Answer no. But don't start explaining yourself and adding things. But the truth is, sometimes it matters, and sometimes it's very important. Somebody says to you, I heard of somebody who, talking about the library, somebody who lives in America for many years, but he grew up in Golders Green, and he's here for a visit, and he's reminiscing about when he was young, what he used to do, etc. And he was talking, he asked somebody, he said, is Golders Green Library still open? So he says, yes. So he says, you know what? I fancy going back and visiting the library. Why? I spent so many hours when I was a child in that library. Not only did I belong to the library as a child, but I also used to go there in the evenings. My mother used to take me, and there used to be, like, the librarians used to have reading sessions in order to encourage children to get involved in borrowing books and reading, etc., etc. And I remember I used to sit on the floor cross-legged together with all the other children, and the librarian was there sitting on the floor cross-legged with us, and they read us Jack and the Beanstalk, and I read Winnie the Pooh and the Kweisenschloss, yeah, etc. He says, I remember that. I've got such fond memories that I want to go back to the library. So therefore, is the library open on, you know, when is the library open this Wednesday? And the answer is the library is open all day on Wednesday. But he wants to go back, and he wants to experience the feeling. He says, I remember the smell of the carpet and the old bookcases and the smell of books in the room, etc., etc. It's a childhood memory so fond, I'd like to experience it again. Well, the truth is, al pi halacha, is the library open in Golders Green? Yes. Can you go back to the library? Yes. But the children's library is now Lubavitch. Children's library has been sold off to Lubavitch, to Chabad, and probably more likely smells of Likutei Sichas, yeah, or Arba Minim. Yeah, so therefore, what? Maybe. So therefore, it wouldn't be a complete answer to tell him, well, where do we see it in the Torah? In the Torah, we've got a parasha at the beginning of Parashas Vayera, where the Malachim came to visit Avraham Avinu, and Avraham Avinu said, please stay, come in, and I want to feed you. Ve'echo pas lechem, v'sadu libchem v'achat ha'avayru. He said to them, I will give you bread, and you will become full on the bread, and then you can carry on your journey. So he intended giving them asuda kesuda shleima b'shatre. He was going to feed them with all sorts of things. He was going to give them meat and mustard and milk and cheese and all the rest of it, etc. And he was going to give them far more than bread, and he knew he was going to give them far more than bread. And nevertheless, he said, ve'ekho pas lechem. All I'll give you is a piece of bread. Says the Gemara in Bava Metzia, because sadikim, oimrim ma'at, bo'isim harve. It's a modesty. It's a midas chasidus to say, you say that I'm doing very little. You don't offer to do a lot, but you do much more than you promised. You give them much more than they bargained for. So therefore, here, ve'ekho pas lechem was only a part truth. It was an incomplete truth. I'm only telling you that I'm giving you a little piece of bread, slice of bread, sandwiches, not even sandwiches, not even filled. And I thought, because I'll say this is a praise. Why? Because there's no harm whatsoever. It's a midas chasidus. It's an incomplete. He didn't tell any lies. He said, ve'ekho pas lechem, I'm going to give you lechem. I'm going to give you other things as well. Where did we learn it together? I mean, there was another example I heard of, which was, for instance, that somebody's inquiring about someone else about a shidduch, or whether or not to go into partnership with him. And he wants to know whether this person has money. So he asked somebody, tell me, he said, do you know whether or not Pliny, whether or not he's well off, whether he's comfortable, does he have money, etc.? He says, Pliny, he says, are you crazy? You never heard? He says, his father was a multi-millionaire. His father died and left him a massive Yerusha. Fine, he can go away. That's absolutely true. He doesn't tell the person that since his father died, he made a small fortune out of a big fortune. Yeah, and they blew it all, and he went gambling, or he did bad investments, and I don't know what, and the guy doesn't have anything left. So, is it true that he inherited a large fortune? Yes, but it's an incomplete truth. And because it's an incomplete truth, and not the whole truth, that can cause damage. Where did we learn that together? Said the Chofetz Chaim, speaking about Lashon Hara L'Toyeles, Klal Yud Sif Cotton Test in the Be'er Mayim Chaim, said the Chofetz Chaim, and we gave an example, that sometimes you have a lot of heter to speak Lashon Hara L'Toyeles. Sometimes we have the right to speak Lashon Hara L'Toyeles, which is what we were speaking about earlier, but there are conditions attached. And one of the conditions attached, says the Chofetz Chaim, is that you must tell not just the truth, in other words, when you're saying the Lashon Hara L'Toyeles, not just the Lashon Hara itself, but you've got to add in all the other circumstances which might matter to this particular case. And the example that I gave you from a sefer that I learned was as follows. You've got a manager in a business. There's an office. And there's an employee who comes consistently late. And the manager is very concerned about this. So he speaks to the employee. And he says, you know, every day you're supposed to be at work at 9 o'clock. You come late, we have to cover for you, we have to take messages, the customers are unhappy, they want to speak to you, etc. And it's part of your contract that you've got to be here at 9 o'clock every day. So therefore do something about it. And he tells him over and over and over again, he doesn't listen. So what's the job of the manager? What is the duty of the manager now? The duty of the manager is to report back to the employer, to the boss, and to tell him, look, we've got this employee, a nice guy, does his job well, but he comes late every day and I've tried my best and he doesn't listen. And he's going to get this employee into trouble with the boss, and the boss might even fire him as a result of that. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that's Lashon Hara L'Toyeles. You're fulfilling all the conditions. You're speaking Lashon Hara to the boss, L'Toyeles, for a tachlis, for a purpose. That's your job as that's your duty, and that's your job as the manager of the business to report to the employer if there is a problem. And the employer will have to do something about it, and it might be that says the Chofetz Chaim, but if you know of any mitigating circumstances surrounding that man, which might make it less likely that he's going to get sacked, for instance, he's got a disabled wife, he's got a sick child, he's a massive Talmud Chacham and he learns till 3 o'clock every morning. I'm not saying that's an excuse, but it might be a mitigating situation. Or he goes out collecting, or he's involved in Hatzolah, etc., etc. He does all sorts of good things, or he's got bad, difficult situations at home, And therefore, as a result of that, there are mitigating circumstances which might not make the employer sack this man immediately. Says the Chofetz Chaim, you've got to tell the whole truth. You can tell the truth. He comes late every day. I've spoken to him. He doesn't listen. He doesn't do anything about it. That is the truth. There's no lie there involved. He hasn't told anything which isn't true, but it's not the whole truth. If it's not the whole truth, then it becomes sometimes a lie. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that if it is something which is dvorim shel ma bakach, it's something that doesn't matter, like, let's say, Amidas Chasidus, like Avraham Avinu, who said, ve'echop aslechem, there was no harm whatsoever. It was only a bonus if they will get more than bread alone, more than dry bread, they would get other things to eat. Then, Amidas Chasidus, then there's no harm in telling a partial truth. But if somebody was simply asking, is the library open on Wednesdays, and it's just for information, and it doesn't need to, there's no consequence from it, he's not planning to use the library, visit the library, go to the library, then no harm whatsoever. Then you can tell an incomplete truth. But there are many, many situations where the whole truth, where you have to tell the whole truth, and a partial truth, even though it's true, is not sufficient. So that's the situation of the truth, and that explains what the whole truth is. Sometimes the truth alone, without the addition to it, that gives a complete answer, an incomplete answer is not the truth. That's called sheker. The Chofetz Chaim says it will be sheker emoiti shemra for that manager to explain that situation to the boss without explaining the mitigated circumstances if he knows about them. In the couple of minutes that we've got left, just the question of what about nothing but the truth? So in halacha, and I haven't got the time to go through it, but I had a situation once where I was dealing with an Israeli patient, and he was going to have a heart transplant in Harefield Hospital. He didn't understand a word of English, and he was very, very worried that the doctors were telling me things which I wasn't relaying to him. He didn't understand the English. I was doing my best to translate. He wanted to know, what are my chances? And the doctors actually said his chances are 50-50, going back 35 years. He only had a 50-50 chance. I didn't know whether or not I'm allowed to tell him that your chances are only 50-50. That will bring a yush, that will bring a shivering lave, that will break his heart. Maybe he will decide not to go ahead with the operation. Maybe he won't take his drugs, he'll give up, etc., etc., etc. I was in the hospital. I also had the shout at the same time because he was being prepped for the operation as to whether or not I should tell him to say vidui. If I tell him to say vidui, then he's going to get the impression he's telling me to say vidui because he knows that my chances are very low. I phoned around. I was on a phone there. I was trying to get hold of a rabbi. I wanted to ask Shaila, and eventually I got hold of Rabbi Roberts, and Rabbi Roberts told me quite clearly that anything that might cause him any shivroin leiv, that anything that might cause him any yush, any feeling of that he wants to give up or that his chances are bad or that the doctors are not planning that he should be, I'm not expecting that the operation should succeed. Nothing like that. He said, you don't say to him anything. He said, you can tell him a lie. I told him in the end that his chances, the doctors say 70-80%. Obviously not 100. 70-80, I told him, with the head of Rabbi Roberts, and I did not say vidui with him, and I didn't suggest anything which suggests that he might not survive the operation. That was the halacha. But the 70-80, alpi halacha, in truth, if you talk about English truth, conventional understanding of the word truth, 70-80% was not correct. The correct truth was 50-50. The halacha said, say to him 70-80. Now, don't give him any impression, if you like, anything that might cause a shiver and lave. And there are other examples of this, and that's what there are Gemaras, and that's what Rav Moshe Batal dealt with more at length, was situations where the halacha would demand that you would say what we would call conventionally a lie, what we would call sheker, but al pi halacha, that becomes the MS. And that's the rest of Rav Moshe Batal's shir. So therefore, basically, just to follow it through, when I stand in the court and I say to the judge, I'm going to tell the truth, that is the accurate reporting of things that I saw, things that I know. The whole truth means that if there is a situation where I have to fill in the rest of the information and not just give a partial answer, because that's not the accurate answer, then I have to tell the whole truth. Nothing but the truth to the judge is pshat. I don't want your lambda shishtikalach about what the halacha says, about how you should change things and what sometimes what conventional is not true, what conventionally would be untrue, what would be conventionally a lie, would be halacha, halachic thing. You can't bend the truth in order to suit the halacha in my court. You can't bend the truth in order to suit the requirements of the Torah or to suit the requirements of your client in my court. As far as the judge is concerned, all I want to hear from you is nothing but the truth in the conventional sense. Unfortunately, he had the operation. He was in the coma for 2 weeks and he was lifted.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.